and welcome to Health Chat. I am Chinedu Ofor in for Leonard Modu. Today on Health Chat, a discussion with former US President Jimmy Carter on Guinea worm and other health stories around the world. Dracunculiasis is an infection caused by a parasite called the Guinea worm. A person becomes infected when they drink contaminated water. The disease has been eliminated in most parts of the world, but still exists in Chad, Ethiopia, Mali, and South Sudan. At first, the illness has no symptoms, but about 1 year later, there's painful burning feeling as a blister forms, usually on the legs. The fluid-filled pockets burst as the worms come out of the skin over a few weeks. In 2014, Nigeria announced it had eliminated Guinea worm in the country. The Carter Center, founded by the former US President Jimmy Carter, who sadly is in hospice, led the campaign to eliminate the parasites. VOA's Yahyaus Wahib spoke with Carter on how his foundation achieved the feat.
They can still drink water from the same rain pond as before. What the village has to do is to make sure that nobody goes into the pond water waiting or to get another drink of water with guinea worm emerging from their bodies. So if the adult worms don't go into the water and lay new eggs, then a year later, if everybody does that, then a year later, you won't have any more guinea worm ever, unless somebody comes there from outside and goes into the water with a guinea worm coming out. So 1 year cycle, it has to go through a human being, and if nobody goes into the water for a year with an adult guinea worm laying eggs, then the disease is gone from that pond forever.
What lessons learned from Nigeria could be applied to other countries?
Well, to get as much publicity as possible for the most remote areas of the country and to recruit as much assistance as you can. This is key to it. Quite often, people in the remote villages, they're illiterate. They can't read and write. So we use posters without words on it to tell the story about guinea worm, but you have to go to every single village individually. And we were lucky enough in Ethiopia to have very strong support from a former president, General Gawon, G-O-W-O-N. So we try to recruit as many partners as we can. And this was especially effective in Nigeria, where we started out with about 650,000 cases and went down to zero.
That is amazing. To what extent do you have to reach out to subgroups like women and local leaders?
We depend on them overwhelmingly, particularly women volunteers. Right now, we are concentrating on southern Sudan, which is going to be the last place with guinea worm, and we have about 12,000 volunteers now working for us with about 100 employees, most of them Sudanese. So we depend heavily on women because they take care of the children. They're the ones that ordinarily go to the ponds to get water, and if we can educate the women about what causes the disease, that's the key to success.
In some parts of Africa, Mr. President, your eradication strategy included former leaders. Who were some of the leaders, and how did they help increase awareness about the disease?
Well, I would say the foremost former leader that helped us has been General Gawon, about whom I just referred. And he has a special interest in this disease, and he volunteered to be our partner in Nigeria. An incumbent president also of Mali was out of office, and he volunteered to help with guinea worm. And former president of Ghana, Flight Lieutenant Jerry Rawlings, also he's not in office anymore, but when he was president, he was a leader of educating English-speaking countries. So these three men are just typical of the leaders that we have gotten to help us.
The Carter Center is credited with respecting indigenous beliefs while eradicating the waterborne parasite. How did you work around some of the beliefs, including erroneous ones that guinea worm is caused by witchcraft?
Well, that was not easy in some cases, and that has caused us some delay in eradicating guinea worm because some of the religious leaders were making money treating the guinea worm disease. There's nothing you can do about the disease, but when the worm is coming out of a body, you can wrap it on a stick and it hastens the time it emerges. And some of them didn't want to give up their lucrative treatment practice. And others said that we were despoiling their sacred pond out of which they got water. If it hadn't been for the pond, the village wouldn't be there. Their ancestors wouldn't have lived. So they looked on their rain pond as sacred. And when we said that that's where the disease comes from, they said we were insulting their sacred place. So we've had to convince them by showing them the water that comes out of the pond with the little things floating around in it. And also we've just said, okay, you let us demonstrate that we can do away with this disease. So sometimes it's been very difficult, but we've succeeded now in every place.
Are there lessons from the successful campaign used against guinea worm disease that could be used in efforts against other diseases, including polio?
Yes, we used the same technique against a number of other diseases. That is to go into a village to convince the leaders that we're there to help them, to let them know that they have to do almost all the work. So we're now dealing with a number of other diseases ourselves. For instance, we're working on schistosomiasis. We're working on onchocerciasis, which is river blindness. We're working on trachoma. We're working on lymphatic filariasis, which is elephantiasis. We're also working on malaria in some cases. But in all of those cases, we use the same technique that we did with guinea worm. That is to recruit as many of the leaders as possible, including the president of the country, the minister of health, the village chief, but also as many volunteers as we can. So the technique that we use on guinea worm basically is the same as we use on other diseases. Of course, all of them don't involve, you know, treatment of pond water.
Have you had to work with religious leaders who initially may be suspicious of the intentions of outsiders in the area?
Yes, some of the religious leaders with whom we worked, either witch doctors or some others, have contradicted what we've said because they claim that the disease is caused not by guinea worm eggs in the water, but by other means, curse of God or confluence of planets or drinking goat's blood or things of that kind. So we've had to recruit whenever possible to get the religious leaders to be partners with us instead of opponents of our program.
Yes, because some actually believe it's intended to impose like birth control or spread of the HIV.
That's right, but what we've used primarily to eradicate guinea worm is just pouring the water through a very fine filter cloth. And I think we can very quickly show them that's not any way to affect the birth of babies or to hurt anybody.
Mr. President, Sudan is one of the last strongholds of guinea worm.
It is the last one.
Which parts of the country are most affected, and is guinea worm present in camps for internally displaced people that we hear so much about?
No, the internally displaced people are in northern Sudan, in the 15 states in the north, and there are no guinea worm cases now in northern Sudan. All the remaining guinea worm cases in Sudan are in South Sudan. And the latest figures I have on that are that we know that there are 1,368 cases, 1,368 cases in Sudan, in southern Sudan. And in all the other states combined, that is in Ghana and Mali and Ethiopia, all of them put together only 36 cases. So you see that almost all of the cases now left in southern Sudan.
So the south of the country is, as you know, Mr. President, largely underdeveloped and also has relatively little governmental or public health infrastructure. How does this affect efforts to detect and control guinea worm?
Well, it makes it more difficult, and that's probably why we've got southern Sudan as the last place. Also, it's been afflicted off and on for the last 25 years with a terrible war. And so in the midst of combat, then our volunteers are reluctant to go into some of the villages that are still involved in conflict. And that's a problem for us now because some of those villages that still have guinea worm, our people can't go in there because their bicycles or their pickup trucks or motor scooters are stolen and they are intimidated because of violence.
That's VOA's Yahya Wahib speaking with former U.S. President Jimmy Carter. Nigerian health authorities have confirmed an outbreak of diphtheria and reported more than 25 people, most of them children, dead in one of the worst hit states in the country's north. Nigeria's Centers for Disease Control and Prevention has initiated an emergency response to the outbreak and is monitoring the situation in four of the nation's 36 states. Reporter Muna Chichooks spoke with Dr. Ojum Ikeoma Ogwo. He's the chief medical director of Gregory University Specialist Hospital in Uturu in the southeastern state of Abia.
Diphtheria is a type of bacteria that causes infection of the upper respiratory tract. It's caused by Corynebacterium diphtheria. What makes it difficult or what makes it dangerous is that it secretes toxins. And the toxin affects the upper airways, and mostly in children. It will block the upper airways and leads to difficulty in breathing. And then it may affect the nose and other airways.
We know that recently that Nigerian government said there was an outbreak in some parts of the country. What do you know about the outbreak in Nigeria?
Yeah, the outbreak in Nigeria happened within the northern zone. It has not been properly documented, but there's an outbreak in the northern part of Nigeria in which it was indicated that either they would be negligent of their vaccine, because usually these are preventable illnesses, that when you take your vaccinations, that you will not have it. The area reported would discover that they were negligent of their vaccines. but it has not been specifically documented the number and this. So because that led to us helping out.
The people that are affected, you did mention children, that their children are at risk. What about adults? Adults, are they not at risk of this disease?
Adults are at risk, but it is because they've developed immunity. You know that children usually, they rely on the immunity that was conferred on them by their mothers. So, but adults now, when they have their own immunity, because they are now grown, they can protect themselves. And even when they suffer from diphtheria, it's not as severe as it would be in children. Usually it's milder in adults, because what usually happens is that there are toxins that are secreted, but adults, because they have a lot of immunity, they can dilute it themselves. And then the toxins will not manifest like the coating of the throats and the nose and the tonsils.
This diphtheria disease, has it been existing or is it a new disease? And you tell us the signs and symptoms to look out for to know that someone is suffering from diphtheria.
It's been an old disease that's been as old as age. But what happens is that people didn't know, because what was happening before, was in the earlier times, was that people that were suffering from it were dying of suffocation. People didn't know until now science discovered what was causing it. So it had been in existence. But when vaccines were discovered to prevent it, it became milder at least. We thought we could by now and it would have been extinct. But still, because people are not diligent in their vaccinations. So that is why it's still existing. The signs and symptoms are you cough, there are lesions in the nose, you feel like choking, you have difficulty in breathing, the person is gasping for breath, nose rings may be red because of the toxin that is secreted. They may lead to subcutaneous lesions on the skin, and these are the signs that the child usually develops to indicate that it's diphtheria.
What could be the main cause and where is it common?
It is found in areas where there is congestion, like now we have IDP camps, because the disease is transmitted by droplets. You see, somebody could cough, a child could cough and then transmit to the fellow child. When there's congestion, when people are many in a room or in an area, even in school, people who are children get it from school. People that are the kindergartens that are taken to school, they get it when they are congested. So that is why most of the times what we do is to make sure all areas are airy. So the mode of transmission is by droplets. When somebody coughs, the person transmits it by droplets and the other person gets it.
Talk to us about the treatment. How could one be cured of this diphtheria?
When one has manifested the disease, we use antibiotics to treat the person. We have antibiotics like erythromycin, which is the mainstay of treatment. If the person is so debilitated that the person cannot take it orally, that's parenteral. That's what means giving it IV to the person. So, but what usually happens is if somebody suffers from it, the people around the area are vaccinated, including the adults, so that they do not retransmit it to the child who is being looked after. Treatment is by antibacteria. The most potent bacteria is erythromycin.
What about the vaccine you mentioned earlier?
Yeah, the vaccine is something that are given to children. It's given at 6 months. The person takes the first shot of the vaccine. The person is only given once, but it might be repeated if you think that the immunity is not properly developed.
So in preventing this disease, should surveillance be every Nigerian's responsibility?
Yes, it should be every Nigerian's responsibility. But look, we have this vaccination in all the primary health centers. It is only negligence that will make disease to manifest. By now, the scientists are thinking that diphtheria should have been extinct if people have kept to this, because usually if you don't have somebody suffering from it, you can't transmit it. Like if everybody is vaccinated, just know how the disease will proliferate. So surveillance actually should, when you notice anybody having difficulty in breathing, when there's anybody gasping for breath or people coughing, it should be reported, and that's a way of surveillance.
Do you know whether international agencies are involved in curtailing this disease in Nigeria, or is it a Nigerian business?
The international agencies are involved. I think the Melinda Gates also helping, like they're helping in polio. Melinda Gates is also helping in prevention by supplying vaccines. And then the World Health Organization is also helping, because they have been supplying the third world countries with vaccines. You know, the vaccines are the way of movement, and this cannot be handled by Nigerians alone, because it requires a cold chain to transport it.
Okay, what advice would you give to Nigerians who are still ignoring this disease?
The advice is this: it must be compulsory for every child to be vaccinated. We have lined up series of vaccinations that every child must take. We should not joke with it. The only thing is to advise it both in churches and mosques and in schools. It should be announced that every child must be vaccinated. If every child is vaccinated, then diphtheria will be prevented.
It is a deadly disease.
Very deadly. Now, when somebody is gasping for breath, or when somebody is coughing for breath, the person must surely die, if no intervention is given.
That's reporter Munachi Chuk speaking with Dr. Ojim Ekeoma Ogwo, the chief medical director at Gregory University Specialist Hospital in Uturu in the southeastern state of Abia. Health right campaigners in Malawi are welcoming a national campaign against a record cholera outbreak, which has killed nearly 1,400 people. President Lazarus Chakwera launched a campaign pledging to reduce the transmission and mortality rate of the waterborne illness. Lamek Masina reports from Blantyre.
Malawi is grappling with its worst cholera outbreak in recent memory, which has now affected all the country's 29 districts. President Lazarus Chakwera said the spread is largely because of people in the country are not following good hygiene practices.
And because behaviors are not changing, the situation has become dire. So far, over 1,300 funerals have happened around the country because of cholera. And the disease is still spreading at an alarming rate. We are getting between 500 to 600 cholera cases every day in our health facilities throughout the country.
The campaign, known as Titetse Cholera or Let's End Cholera, would focus on repairing of water kiosks across the country and helping people construct toilets in their homes. Chakwera said statistics show that about 40% of Malawians do not have toilets and instead use the bush to relieve themselves. Several organizations in Malawi have long been running campaigns against the practice of open defecation, but with little result.
We are human beings with dignity, not animals that can just use any place as a toilet. If any place is not a toilet, don't treat it as a toilet. And a toilet is not something that is given to you by government or something that is donated from abroad or something that comes down from heaven. It is something you give yourself as a human being because you respect yourself.
Health authorities say they hope the campaign will help reduce the cholera fatality rate from the current 3.6% to 1%. Health rights campaigner George Jobe welcomes the campaign, but says the government should go further by ending myths and misinformation associated with the outbreak. Jobe is also the executive director for the Malawi Health Equity Network. He cited two recent incidents in Lilongwe and Balaga districts where angry members of the community assaulted medical workers and vandalized public health facilities, forcing them to close. The community members accused the medical workers of deliberately infecting patients with cholera-infested vaccines.
The current cholera seems to be different from the previous outbreaks of cholera, just because the current one was preceded by COVID-19. And we shall continue to provide some pieces of advice to government that when we are doing awareness raising, we must be mindful that we are also fighting with the residues of COVID-19.
President Chakwera ordered the reopening of the closed health facilities and assured the health workers that they would receive maximum security. In the meantime, the Africa Centers for Disease Control and Prevention and United Nations have pledged their support toward the success of the cholera campaign. Rebecca Donto is the United Nations resident coordinator in Malawi.
The United Nations is currently in the process of preparing a multi-sector cholera flash appeal to increase the capacity of the UN and NGOs to support the government of Malawi. It will be launched next week.
Local media have reported that Malawi needs an additional $40 million for an effective cholera response. Lamek Masina for VOA News, Blantyre, Malawi.
Cameroon's health ministry has dismissed a report of two suspected cases of Marburg virus in the country after a first deadly outbreak in neighboring Equatorial Guinea. Health officials along the border said there were two suspected cases of the severe hemorrhagic fever in Cameroon after Malabo confirmed 9 deaths and 16 possible infections. Despite dismissing the reported cases, Cameroon's health ministry says it is increasing surveillance and travel restrictions along the border. Moki Edwin Kinzeka reports from Yaounde, Cameroon.
Health Minister Manauda Malachi says Cameroon does not yet have any suspected cases of the Marburg virus, despite reports of two possible infections. Health officials in Cameroon's south region on Tuesday said a teenage boy and girl suffering from high fever were rushed to a hospital Monday in Olamze on the border with Equatorial Guinea. The health officials said the children were suspected of being infected with the Marburg virus, are in isolation and are responding to treatment. But Malachi seemed to contradict those reports when he spoke Wednesday to state broadcaster Cameroon Radio Television. Malachi says the decision by Cameroon to stop Marburg virus, an illness like Ebola, by restricting movement along the border with Equatorial Guinea is so far yielding fruit. He says as of Wednesday at midday Central African time, Cameroon had not yet reported any deaths or suspected cases of Marburg virus.
La frontière.
Malachi says civilians should avoid contact with animals and people who have traveled to Equatorial Guinea and make sure people with fever, fatigue, and blood-stained vomit and diarrhea are isolated. But Malachi warned its porous border with Equatorial Guinea, which confirmed Monday its first outbreak of the deadly virus, puts it at risk. Cameroon last week said it restricted movement along the border after Equatorial Guinea quarantined hundreds of people in Kentem province, where the hemorrhagic fever was first reported. The World Health Organization says Equatorial Guinea sent samples to the Pasteur Institute in Senegal after an alert by a health official on February 7, and one of them tested positive. The WHO says Marburg was transmitted to people from fruit bats, spreads between people via bloody fluids, and has a fatality rate of up to 88%. Marburg is in the same family as the Ebola virus, but unlike Ebola, there are no vaccines for Marburg, just treatments from the symptoms such as dehydration and fever. Health officials from Cameroon and Gabon, which also shares borders with Equatorial Guinea, met Tuesday in Yaoundé and agreed to work together to prevent the virus from spreading. University of Yaoundé sociology lecturer François Bingono was in the meeting. He says the frequent movement of people across the borders will make stopping the virus a challenge.
Même en cas d'épidémie,
Bingono says in 2020, Cameroon and Equatorial Guinea restricted movement along their border to protect their populations from COVID-19, but civilians on both sides did not respect the order. He says people living on both sides of the Cameroon-Equatorial Guinea border belong to the same ethnic groups, speak the same language, and celebrate happy events or mourn such events together. Bingono says health workers not known in border communities are struggling to educate locals that a deadly virus threatens their lives. He says they will need traditional rulers to help convince their people. The U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention says the virus was first identified in 1967 in simultaneous outbreaks in laboratories in Marburg and Frankfurt, Germany, and in Belgrade. Marburg is not new to Africa, but is relatively new to West Africa. An outbreak in Ghana in September last year killed 2 people, while Guinea recorded 1 death from the virus in 2021, the first known case in West Africa. The WHO reported previous outbreaks in Angola, the Democratic Republic of Congo, Kenya, South Africa, and Uganda. Moki Edwin Kinzeka for VOA News, Yaoundé, Cameroon.
You're listening to Health Chat on Voice of America. It is time for a short break. Don't go away. We'll be right back.
We are bringing women voices to the conversation on things that matter to the hearts and minds of women. From right here in the nation's capital to on the ground from all over the African continent. We hear your voices, our voices, right here on VOA, on Wednesdays at 1900 UTC.
Welcome back to Health Chat. I am Chinedu in for Linod Modu. A U.S. federal mandate for healthcare workers to get vaccinated against COVID has been in place nationally for a year, but some contend it's time to end it. Associated Press correspondent Julie Walker reports.
A federal mandate for healthcare workers to get vaccinated against COVID has been in place nationally for a year, but some contend it's time to end, citing fewer severe cases and healthcare staffing shortages. An Associated Press analysis identified about 750 nursing homes and 110 hospitals nationwide that have been cited for violations of the vaccine mandate. Some nursing home administrators, like Tim Corbin with Truman Lake Manor in rural Missouri, say that's made it harder to fully staff and want the mandate gone.
For people to leave the industry is over a vaccine mandate. I feel that the care they would provided would have done more good than the vaccine they could have taken.
But Dr. Georges Benjamin with the American Public Health Association says vaccine mandates work.
This is very important for both protecting yourself as well as your patients.
The healthcare vaccine mandate is scheduled to run until November of next year. I'm Julie Walker.
Stay tuned every Wednesday and Friday at 9 p.m. UTC time with your pilot, Roger Moon, to listen to the RM Show, where you can respond to our question of the week, get some entertainment news, and enjoy some great music. It's all happening at VOA Africa. God bless. Peace, Africa.
U.S. health advisors were weighing whether the overdose reversal drug Naloxone should be made available as an over-the-counter medication to help fight the national opioid crisis. A panel of experts to the Food and Drug Administration will vote on the suite following hours of presentations and discussions on whether untrained users can follow instructions to use the antidote in emergency situations. The brand under review, Naxan, comes as a nasal spray and is leading version of the drug. The panel vote is non-binding recommendation, and the FDA will make a final decision on the drug in the coming weeks, moving Naloxone, which is also available in various injectable versions over-the-counter, is the latest government effort to increase use of medication that has been a key tool in the battle against the U.S. overdose epidemic that kills more than 100,000 people annually. A doctor in Bolivia has told the local media that the country is struggling with the worst dengue fever outbreak since the COVID-19 pandemic, bringing hospitals near to collapse, with children being some of the most affected. Local media report that children and teenagers on intravenous drips and with dengue symptoms have been waiting for care in the corridors of Santa Cruz's regional hospital, De Nuños. This, as the emergency's chief, Dr. Medi, says the current outbreak has brought the healthcare facility near to collapse. Bolivia's dengue fever wave has left 26 people dead and cases rose to 6,845. The Bolivian news agency ABI reports about 75% of them are located at the soil-rich region of Santa Cruz. In response, the government is working on mitigating potential dengue-carrying mosquito breeding habitats. The Africa Center for Disease Control and Prevention says monkeypox vaccines will arrive in Africa within the next 2 weeks. The Associated Press says the doses will go to countries with the greatest need and largest overall burden, including Congo and Nigeria. In December, the Africa CDC says the continent was set to receive its first batch of 50,000 monkeypox vaccines as a donation from South Korea. It said it would first go to healthcare workers and those living in the hardest hit areas. That's all for this edition of Health Chat. For more health news and medical breakthroughs, visit voaafrica.com. Thank you all for joining us, and special thanks to all our affiliate stations throughout Africa for carrying Health Chat. I'm your host, Chinedu Ofor, in for Linod Bodu in Washington. And until next time, take care, stay safe, and strive to make every day a healthy day.